Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to be with you for our time together to share those exciting strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge. Excuse me. I just got a bizarre question from my tech guy, so I'm going to pop over here and take a peek at, we have two different numbers popping in, so let's see. I am so excited about our guest who's joining us tonight. Our guest is Rita Emmett, who is a best-selling author and expert on overcoming procrastination. Rita, are you with us? Oh, well, let's try the other one.
Hear me?
There we go. Hi, Rita. I have two different numbers popping up for you here, so I wasn't sure which one was you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm with you, and I'm so excited to be here. I love encouraging people to write their books. That's just a passion of mine. I know so many authors who've written books. Nobody has ever, ever, ever regretted writing a book. The only regret was not writing it sooner. So I'd love to just kick off tonight and let them get started.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I will share with folks that if they are interested in participating in your awesome program to get help writing their book, they can go to our website, brainbonanza.com, and click on the link in the upper right-hand corner. So that said, Rita, before we talk about the authorship aspect, what inspired you to conquer procrastination?
Oh, to conquer procrastination. I have to tell you, I was the greatest procrastinator in the world, and now I'm a recovering procrastinator. And my whole life was just colored by procrastination, and I really thought it was like a personality trait or character flaw, like this is how I am, this is how I'll always be. And I discovered it's simply a habit, and people can break the habit. So my heart especially goes out to people who are procrastinating about writing their books. I really empathize with them. In fact, the name of the program you mentioned, it's called The Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship, because so many people talk all the time about, oh, I've wanted to write a book since I was in school, I've wanted to write a book forever, and they just can't seem to get themselves going. So that's what you and I are going to do tonight, Melanie.
Well, I know I had several people who said they had conflicts and couldn't listen live, but we're looking forward to listening to the recording, and a couple people who are going to try and join us live. So I will invite them to dial in with questions that they might have for you, and that number is 347-215-8390. And so, Rita, I'm going to turn it over to you to talk about your journey to create The Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship, which I think probably started with the journey to publish your first book, The Procrastinator's Guide.
Exactly. When I first wrote, you hear me stuttering, it's like, I want to tell you everything. When I first wrote The Procrastinator's Handbook, I didn't know one person who was published. I didn't know how to get an agent. I didn't know how to get a publisher. I didn't know if I wanted to be self-published or have a trade or royalty publisher. I didn't know how to make decisions, and I could not find any help out there. So that Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship is what I wished I had back then. And I was muddling along, and even with that I had no connections or anything, the book sold 100,000 in the first 14 months. It's now in 32 countries. And, oh, as you know, Melanie, I'm going to share with your people because this might inspire them. It's not a bragging, it's just a hope for inspiring. In 3 days, my husband and I will fly to Barcelona because I've been invited to speak on cruise ships about my books. And a VP at a cruise line read my book and asked if I wanted to speak on cruise ships. And so he, Bruce and I have been to Alaska 3 times, Hawaii, the Panama Canal, the Mexican Riviera, Bermuda, the Caribbean, and we had a wonderful dream come true trip 2 years ago where it was a Balkan cruise where we went through the Scandinavian countries and Germany and Poland and 2 days in Russia. But 3 days from now, we are going to get on a plane and fly to Barcelona. I can't believe this. And we're going to cruise the Mediterranean. We're going to go to Palermo, Italy, Barcelona, Palermo, Athens, Greece, Rhodes, Greece, and on St. Patrick's Day, we're going to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Egypt. And these people are very generous to us. They don't say, oh, you have to go here, you have to go there. They say, give us your wish list. So we gave them, oh, I think we came up with like 15 or 18 wishes, with cruises we would love to take. And I got back an email from her, and she said, oh, I'm so sorry, but we can't accommodate you. And but she said, we can offer you these 2 ships. She gives me the name of the ship and a date, and that's all. She didn't say where it was. So when my husband looked it up, he said, Rita, come here, I think we've got a mistake. And we saw this fabulous itinerary. And I called the woman and I said, is this a mistake? And she said, no. And I said, how could you apologize for this? And she said, well, it wasn't what you asked for. And I said, I didn't have the nerve to ask for it because it's so much fun. So if anybody there loves to travel, it's just one more inspiration, incentive, motivation, whatever you think, to push yourself to write that book, because you just don't know what's going to happen. You just never know where that book will lead you. So I was writing, let's see, I wrote the Procrastinator's Handbook first, and then a book to help children stop procrastinating, for adults to help children stop procrastinating, then a book called The Clutter Busting Handbook to get rid of all that clutter, and then I heard so many people were asking about, oh, what are we going to do about stress? You know, I really have stopped procrastinating, I really don't have clutter, but I still have stress in my life. And so just a month ago, my fourth book came out called Manage Your Time to Reduce Your Stress, a handbook for the overworked, overscheduled, and overwhelmed. So what I'm saying is, once you write that first book, and most people have found this to be true, you've broken past a lot of the barriers, a lot of the obstacles, a lot of the bad habits and formed good habits, and the next books aren't hard at all. Now, Melanie, when you asked me what got me to write that book, I shared with you a story. I was taught by nuns in high school, and I was sharing, I tell your listeners this, I was telling Melanie that we take 10% of all of our book royalties and share them and send 10% to the sisters who taught me in high school. And on my graduation day, they all said that I should write a book someday. But on my graduation day, one of the sisters said, you don't forget now, write that book. Well, my first book, I was in my 50s when I finally wrote it. So see, I really was a procrastinator. And you can break the habit and you can get going on your book. So I don't know. Melanie, where would you like to get started? Do you want us to open it to questions first, or do you want me to talk a little bit about how some of this came to be, or...
Actually, I do have a caller with a question, so if you're open to starting with a question, let's do that. So I have someone from area code 651. Hi, you're on the line with Rita. And it looks like they...
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. What's your name?
My name is Deborah Foster.
Hi, Deborah. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Very cool. Okay, what's your question?
Well, basically, I am the classic person that you're talking about, maybe just a hair different because of my experience. My book is going to be a lot more emotionally trying to write, and I think that's the source of my procrastination. And I wondered, when you're tackling the topic of procrastination, that's obviously going to be difficult. But in my particular case, I have purchased your program and done the first lesson so far and feeling very excited about where it's going to go. But the book that I'm writing, it begins, that passion begins when I was age 10 because I was living in Iowa, and my parents during the 81-82 recession lost their jobs, and the state had to come and take us from them. There were five of us kids. And the story is meant to illuminate what happened during that time period. Got a title, pen name. I have to get to my question. Have you dealt with people that are doing a memoir, but their families are sort of afraid of that? And what would you do about that?
Wow, that's really powerful. I just want to address the fact that, yes, you're right, it is going to be painful and very emotional to write this. Many people who have done that, though, do say it was cathartic, that it really released a lot. It really brought closure. It really helped with a lot of the healing. But if you told them that when they were going through it, they would have thrown a plate at you because it was very painful. And I just recently heard a fellow say, you know, tears don't cause us to be sad. Tears release the sadness. And mm-hmm. So to have a good cry right in the middle of writing isn't the worst thing in the world, especially if you give thought to how many people are going to be touched by this. How many people are going to say, oh, I had a similar experience? How many people have? Were you put in the foster system?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
Basically the state came in and said, you have no heat, you have no food. Either you give up your kids or we're taking them. So my parents signed over, they call them China papers, child in need of assistance. And since there were five of us, no foster care family could take us all, so we were split between two.
Yeah, okay. You know, I don't know that there are many books written for foster kids, and that is an extraordinarily difficult and unique experience. And I think it would be so nice for a foster kid to be able to get a memoir from you that you wrote and know that, you know, you came out okay. If you keep thinking about one of the things that really pushed me was to think that I broke the procrastination habit and I am able to write about it and I can help people. And when I wanted to quit, that really kept me going a lot. And you have even more reason to go because I really think that you can get a lot of help. Now, this thing about your family, that's a totally different thing, and I think every family each family is unique. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer. One of the most award-winning, most beloved, and most popular memoirs ever written is Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt. He mm-hmm. wrote it back in the 90s, and it was about his very tough, difficult childhood in Ireland. He made himself wait till his mother died because truly much of their misery was because she was depressed and dysfunctional. But afterwards, it was just as hard because he didn't want to create a bad image about his mother. So mm-hmm. I think you really need to do some reading up about how various people handle things. For instance, some of the comedians you hear, some of them will use their spouse and joke about them, and some will not. Some you'll know all about their kids, some you don't. Irma Bombeck, the humorous writer, used her children a lot, but she promised them she wouldn't tell a story about them until at least a year after such and such, whatever the thing was that happened, and they gave her approval. See, I don't think you're in a position that you should be asking approval because they're going to be censoring your book left and right. So
right.
I think you really need to, I don't have a one-size-fits-all answer for you, but I think it's a very important question to consider, and you're going to have to take it one step at a time. If you want to give us one example, we'll take it. We can't spend the whole call on it, but do you want to give us one example that you're struggling with?
You mean of a family member?
Yeah, that you're worried about a family.
Yeah, I mean, what you said, I was going to speak about my brother, but more important to me, I think, is the fact that it doesn't necessarily make my parents look very good, And I don't want that. I want to be able to paint a more sympathetic picture. And one of my struggles has been, you know, if I do that from a distance, maybe that's easier, you know, with, like, cloaked names and, you know, maybe third person instead of first. So I've gotten stuck in all those questions.
Yeah, that's a story. That's another thing, too, that maybe it will become so difficult that you're going to have to tell it in this happened to so-and-so, a little girl named Sally,
mm-hmm.
and that's your story, because you're right. It's you have to watch every step you're taking, and sometimes I've heard people talking about a memoir that in order to tell the truth about something, they would hurt somebody, and they
mm-hmm.
either left it out, but you know, that weakened the book. The friend I know who left it out, it weakened her book. That would have been the most powerful part of the book, and she left it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're wrestling with different questions than most people are with a book, and it's just one step at a time. If you have somebody that you consider wise and smart, maybe a clergyman or something that you could talk it over with too, it helps to get solid advice from an outsider who
mm-hmm.
might even know some of the family.
Okay, thank you.
What did the family say, though, when you said you were going to write a book? What did they say?
For the most part, actually, they were very excited. My mom is in favor of it. My sister is. Two of my brothers are a little bit more, oh, this is so a shame. It's so much of a shame to us. And, you know, they're embarrassed. But that's
yeah,
the other thing.
If your mom is excited, that's the biggest hurdle. It's your parents who run the risk of looking the worst.
That's true. I worry that my mother doesn't fully understand, because one of the issues with both of my parents is that they have serious mental illnesses. My father has passed, but my mother has bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to sort of speak about some of the actual events that happened won't be flattering to her. And yet I feel like I definitely want to paint that sympathetic picture.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm very afraid of hurting them.
I wouldn't do anything that if it was going to destroy somebody, I wouldn't do it. And, you know, there are different people. Some people are open about saying they have bipolar disorder, and others it destroys them. So again, it's not one size. There's not one answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
You need to take each step. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to write it emotionally, and it's going to be tough to make each decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the fact that your mother's excited about it is very cool. You're going to need to ask her, though. But, you know, before you ask her about how would she feel about you writing about bipolar disorder, do point out to her that when people like Patty Duke and Matt talked about their mental illness, it helped a lot of people. It helped tons of people. Brooke Shields talking about her postpartum depression. People everywhere have these illnesses, and nobody talks about them. So your mother might be willing to let you talk about her illness. It is an illness. I mean, it's the same type of illness as talking about cancer or muscular dystrophy or something. It's a chemical disorder, bipolar, so, you know, you may be able to. But, again, you have to be very sympathetic. You have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I don't really know if I helped.
No, I believe that you did. I can say that you're already helping in the sense that, you know, I didn't have a title before and I didn't have anything outlined. I've got 5 inches of writing from the past that if I actually put it all together probably is a book already.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I mean, hearing from a professional writer that this is not uncommon, it does help.
And it could be a really helpful book. You know what? There are some writers' groups, and some of them are online. Why don't you see if you could track down a writers' group where other people, you know, I know there's writers' groups for romance authors. I know there's writers' groups for mystery authors and for science fiction. There might be one out there for memoirs. And every single person who's written a memoir has to consider, will they, you know, what if I say this, will it hurt the family? Every single person. So if you could find a group of other memoir writers, you might get some help there, too.
Okay, thank you.
You know,
that's
Google it and see if there's any out there.
Okay.
good luck with this. I think it's going to be a good thing you're doing. I think it's going to be helpful to you and helpful to the world.
I think you're right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good.
Thanks for calling, and feel free to call in after listening to Reed if you have other questions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I will explain for people.
I was just going to add that
for people who, because there was a point at which Deborah and I both chuckled when you had suggested finding someone to work with.
Yeah.
Because she and I have emailed about being accountability partners through this writing process.
Oh, fabulous.
So that's what the laughter was about. So I just wanted to explain that because some people may be thinking, why was she laughing about such a serious topic? But that was why.
That's fabulous. You know, before I wrote my book, I took a 16-week continuing ed course on writing, and I joined a writer's group. And I really recommend people, and I majored in English in college, so I really didn't have, I knew I could write, I knew I had a gift for writing, and I knew my grammar and stuff like that, but that really helped me a lot. And sometimes that's what people need. And I'll tell you about my writer's group, it's a magnificent group in the Chicago area, but the darn group met 1 hour and 15 minutes from my house. So I was cranky about this. I'd complain, oh, I got such a long drive. Oh, my gosh, it's 2 hours and a half round trip. Grumble. But it just seems to me I was meant to be there because a woman gave a talk and she became my agent. We stood in line afterwards to talk to her, and I told her that I wanted to write a book about procrastination, and she said, oh, let's take a look at it, and she became my agent. Now, I thought she became my agent because my idea was so wonderful. No, a year and a half after it was published, I found out she became my agent because her husband is a wild procrastinator, an extreme procrastinator, and she thought that by handling my book, you know, maybe through osmosis, maybe he'd read chapter 3 here and he'd pick up a little, and that's the only reason she took me on. I couldn't believe that. I was shot down. But after the week after I signed a contract with her, I found out my local library had a writer's group. I found out two bookstores within 15 minutes of my house had a writer's group. So I was meant to go to that one. And all my four books have been with the same agent and with the same publisher. So you hear some people say they hate their publishers. I don't hate my publisher. I love my publisher. They like me. I love them. We're good to each other. We're a good match. And as long as they want me, I'm staying with them.
Well, good. And it is true that we never know when that synchronicity happens, when we meet the people that will be most helpful, or for the person
right.
who listens to you tonight to say, wow, maybe I can write that book after all.
Yeah.
So what about people who maybe have thought, you know what, yeah, so I thought I could write a book, but I'm really not sure. How do they start?
Go ahead. What ahead.
No, my question was the process of starting and finishing it. How do you start a book for people who just don't have a clue?
Well, one of the things to start a book is to know if you think you're a poor writer or a terrible writer, that's okay. Just write it, and then you could always have it edited later. If you get with a trade publisher in New York or a royalty publisher, whatever you call them, they'll supply an editor, or if not, if you self-publish, you can hire someone to edit it, and they'll straighten it out for you. In fact, let me admit, my book was all messed up. I'm not an organized thinker. People think I'm organized. I act like I'm organized because I don't procrastinate and I don't have clutter, but I don't think in an organized manner. Like, I'm not the one you'd invite over when you move to a new house to help you set up your kitchen and decide where do these cups go in that. That's not my skill. So that's what an editor does. They take what you've written and shovel it around and have it make sense. My book that I handed in to my editor was 33 chapters. She brought it down to 10. She didn't cut out a lot. She said, you know, you told the story here and you told it there. You started this concept in chapter 1. You continued it a little bit more in chapter 3. And then at the very end, you finally wrapped it up. She took and merged a lot of it. So don't worry. I don't think I'm a good writer, but I don't think in an organized way. You might be a terrible writer. Go ahead and just write it. Put it down. I wrote mine as if I was talking to a friend, and that's probably one of the best ways to write a book, just as if you were telling a story. Does that help a little bit?
Sure does. So I'll tell you what, I'll just let you talk for a little bit, because I know you have some exciting stories about both from your writing experience as well as people who are using your Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship. So,
oh, yeah.
Right now we don't have any other callers on the line.
Okay.
So I'll interrupt you if we get any more questions or if I have any more.
I just got an email today from a woman who's taking this course, the Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship, and she told me that the biggest deal for her was she didn't know how to get started. And she is not the kind of thinker, and neither am I, by the way, that in high school when they teach you how to outline one ABCD, two ABCD, she couldn't put it together that way, and neither could I. And so in this course, she learned about mind mapping. A lot of your listeners probably know what mind mapping is. And what she was able to do was throw onto the mind map all the ideas she wanted and the stories she wanted to include and the examples. And then she was able to put it all together at the end, you know, one line at a time and group it. And it organized it for her. And so she told me she's already on the third chapter of her book. She's got it going. So that's what you need. You just need a way to get started, to gather your thoughts together. But before that, if any of your listeners are going around saying, oh, I wish I could write a book, I wish I could write a book, but you're not getting started, I was in that spot, and I heard a talk by Mark Victor Hansen, who's one of the co-authors of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he gave a talk called As a Man Thinketh, So He Is. And then after a lot of the women glared at him, he changed it to As a Person Thinketh, So They Are. That's what he changed it to. And I thought to myself, you know what I'm doing? I keep pushing my book out of my mind. It pushes itself back in, but I push it out. So I decided I'm going to start thinking about my book. And I surrounded myself with all kinds of stuff to get myself thinking about a book. Right now I'm looking up, right at my computer when I sit back, I see a big poster that's framed, and it's Snoopy sitting on top of his doghouse typing on his typewriter. You know how he does. And he says, it's exciting when you've written something that you know is good. And I got it from a teacher's store. One of my kids' teachers had a catalog on her desk, and I asked if I could borrow it. And so one of the places to start, if you cannot get yourself totally started, is start surrounding yourself with everything you can think of to get yourself thinking of yourself as a writer. You could listen to CDs. You could read books about it. Stephen King has a book called On Writing that is magnificent. Makes you want to run out and write a book right away. There are magazines you can subscribe to. There are so many things. So you start there. And then you move into do some mind mapping, and then you get yourself a book. Now you've got yourself a book that's written, and now one of the best tips I ever got was when you start writing a book, don't write a sentence and then go back and polish it up. Don't do that, or at the end of the day, all you've got are three sentences. Just write and write and write, and don't polish it up till either the end of the day or till the next day. And one of the great tips I heard when I heard Stephen King being interviewed, he's really not my favorite author, but he talks more about writing than most authors do. He was being interviewed about writing, and one of the tips he gave that I thought was so superior, what I was doing, and he said what not to do, I would wrap up a chapter before I left my office, before I went to bed. I'd wrap up a chapter and, you know, do all my editing, all my polishing, and print it out, and it would be done, and I'd be finished now, and I'd walk away feeling fabulous that it was finished. But the next day, I couldn't get myself started. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. I can't get myself started. I look at it as a blank page. I can't do it. I don't know. And his tip was always end your writing day in the middle of a chapter. You could end it in the middle of a sentence. That doesn't work for me. So that you come in and you say, okay, this is where I was yesterday, and I'll pick up there. Or better for me is, this is what I wrote yesterday. Now today I'll read it through, and I'll start polishing it. And now I'm going, and the juices are flowing. I get it edited and polished, and now it's time to move on to the next chapter. You've got to do what you can do to get yourself going. Remember in high school how you would put off writing a paper, and then when you finally got started, you realized, oh, I didn't procrastinate about the whole thing. I just procrastinated about getting started. That's what you need to do. A couple of things I use in the book to catapult you to get your butt in that chair so that you start writing. I really suggest the power of rewards. For instance, if you love coffee, you don't let yourself, maybe you have one in the morning to get you started, but you don't let yourself have that second cup until you've sat for a half hour or until you've written half a page or whatever your goal is for that day. Then you get to have the half a cup. I got to tell you, that will, if you love, love, love coffee, that will push you. Or whatever it is you love. Maybe in the evening you love to watch a TV show, but you're not going to let yourself see it. Or even midday, maybe you like to watch a TV show. You're not going to let yourself watch it unless you've done X amount, whatever your X amount is. Maybe it's 1 hour of writing. Maybe it's a half day of writing. Maybe you want to measure it by the pages. Maybe it's X amount of pages, although that's kind of hard because some days it'll flow and, you know, you can write so much, and other days, oh, my gosh, you work for the whole half day is gone and all you've done is two sentences. So, you know, you set up. And then you reward yourself. Now you go out for a walk in nature, or now you can watch that TV show, or have that glass of wine, or whatever it is that's your reward. The reward system is extremely powerful. Procrastination is a game. It's a mind game. And so you need a mind game to leverage against it and hold it back. And as far as I'm concerned, if you start a system of rewards for yourself, that's the place to start. That's what we need is, actually, to start is to make a list of what reward would get you going. Do you have anything that you know for sure, Melanie, would get you going if you didn't let yourself have it till you put in a day of writing or a half a day or an hour? What could you reward yourself with after an hour of writing?
Playtime with my son.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah, not time with him telling him to clean up his room or to do anything else, but just play time. Fabulous, yep. Reward. And then, you know what? And to let him know. How old is he?
7 and a half.
So, oh, fabulous. To let him know, I just put in an hour on a project I've been putting off for weeks or months or years, and I put in an hour on it. It'll probably take me a year to finish it, but I'm going to reward myself for putting in an hour. And my reward is, I'm going to go to the playground. You want to come with? Or I'm going to go to the zoo. You want to come with? Look at the message you gave him. First of all, you gave him a message of first the work and then the reward, which is a lovely habit to start kids on. But secondly, wow, what mom is working on in the office, if I leave her alone, I feel bad, but then I'm part of the reward. What does that do to a kid's self-esteem to say, I'm part of my mom's reward? We went to the zoo over Saturday because my mom put in a couple of hours. I don't even know what she worked on, but I'm part of her reward. So that's very cool.
Thank you.
I'm just taking a sip here. I feel like I'm doing all the talking. Is there any place you want me to go, Melanie, or do you have any more questions?
I don't see any other questions in the queue. Deborah, are you still on the line? Not sure she's there.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
There you are. Did you have any other questions? Uh-huh.
I feel like I'm very excited to get more lessons and to continue.
You want to hang up and get writing.
I'm really enjoying everything that you have to say. I loved your tip about not finishing, you know, something that evening, but kind of maybe leaving it half done. That's good, because I'm like you. If I leave, you know, I put something away and I'm very happy that evening, there's a high chance I won't get back to it the next day.
Yeah. Deborah, did you get to the section yet about mind mapping?
Yes, and I have not done that yet. I've begun the process, but, I'll have to practice that exercise.
I'll tell you, it's fun. It's fun, and I'll let it ride for about, as long as you want. I usually do 6 weeks. If I let that mind map sit there for 6 weeks, invariably when I'm in the shower or when I'm driving, ideas come to me and I've got to write them down. In fact, in my car underneath the driver's seat, I keep an old tape player that's voice activated. And I pull it out and I go, okay, in the chapter about trash perfectionism, that you don't have to be perfect. Let's use the example of when so-and-so was talking about his research and development thing at work. And then I come home, and then I play it back, and then, of course, I forget it in the house and don't have it the next time. But every time I get an idea, I jot it down, and I add it to the mind map, and it's just fabulous. Then, you know, then what happens is things start to fall into where they belong. You've got this whole thing in front of you, and you say, okay, this story is going to go here. And this story is going to go there. I have to say, by the way, Deborah, it's you who's doing the memoir, right?
Yes.
I have to say, I'm going to recommend that you do a little bit of homework on memoir writing because it's different than most kinds of writing. You know, you have more latitude. You could tell it frontwards. You could tell it backwards. You could tell it with flashbacks. And I would like to see you be more familiar with all those things, all your options.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever read Angela's Ashes?
You know, that's very funny you say that because my husband's reading it right now, and I'm supposed to get it when he's done.
Oh, that's very funny.
When you brought that up.
You know, Melanie just said synchronicity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I guess you're meant to.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let me talk. Oh, did you have a question, love?
Not yet. I just say we can send you on to, you know, sharing some other stories and some other tips that can help people through the process. And what you just shared about keeping a voice-activated tape recorder in the vehicle is ways that you can capture the times that you usually get the ideas. And it's not always when you're sitting at your computer or you're typing.
No, it's never when I'm sitting at the computer. Never.
I'm in the shower.
I want to get a thing for the wall of my shower that I can write on. I can't tell you how often the ideas come in the shower. I don't know why.
That is so funny. Deborah, again, that is completely true for me, too. The shower
mm-hmm.
is like my brain just starts going.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's leaving a tape recorder running while we're taking showers. So we can
just
whatever it is that we're thinking of.
Well, we can talk some more about the process of writing and I just want to say a little bit about recognizing excuses. I don't know what happens, but it seems like I shouldn't have said excuses. Excuses sound like we're sabotaging ourselves. Sometimes we are. But something happens when we start writing that all of a sudden everybody in the world needs us. Everybody in the world is having a crisis, at least everybody in our world is having a crisis, and we're the only one that can solve it. And all of a sudden, one night, you're going to find yourself sitting there saying, wait a minute, why is everybody else's needs and priorities more than mine? And remember at the very beginning I said the second book is a little easier because you've formed some habits? I'm not a highly disciplined person. I don't sit and write for 8 hours a day and... You know, I'm just not, I don't mean a habit of discipline. I mean a habit of being able to recognize what really is a crisis and what isn't. For instance, with little kids, you know, from age 3 on, we can teach them that when we have the door closed or a certain thing up, that I'm working. But I would, with little kids, I would only work in half hour or 1 hour spurts so that they know when the timer dings, then they can have our attention. But a lot of people don't teach kids that. So they say, oh, I've started my book 18 times this week, but each time my kids interrupted me. But look at what you're teaching them if they learn that they can come in and they can see a kitchen timer ticking. And they're teaching them numbers, for one thing, if they're real. Not from younger than 3, this doesn't work. Younger than 3, you just have to know you're going to have interruptions. But to have a timer going and let them know that then at the end of the hour, whatever you need, I'll take care of it. And it's the same with people calling and saying you're the only one. We're really not the only one. But, you know, people will say, oh, you know what? The kids are sick and Melanie's home. She doesn't do anything. Because you're trying to write a book, they think you're not doing anything. And if we allow them to treat us that way, that's what happens. But all of a sudden, the day will come that you'll say, no, I am doing something. I don't tell people I'm writing a book because they don't think that's as important as what their crisis is. I say to them, I'm not able to make it today. I have the thing that's on my calendar has been on the calendar for weeks and weeks, and I can't move it. What they don't know is that what's on the calendar is write. I put aside this day to write my book. And in every time at the beginning, every single time I put aside a day to write my book, every single time somebody would call and they desperately need me, and I'd be so happy to not be writing the book that I'd rush off to help them until I realized this is not what's meant to be. This is not making sense at all. I wanted to tell you something that went out of my head, something about, oh, and the other thing is, we have 5 kids, so we are going to have a lot of interruptions, and I am at my best at night. Some people, I have a friend, Dottie, who lived in California, her best time, she'd get up at 4:30 in the morning and write. That was her time to write. If I tried to write at 4:30 in the morning, I wouldn't be able to write it and read it, and neither would you. I'm terrible. I'm the one who comes staggering in and saying, I need direction. Somebody aim me. But I'm my best at night, so all of my books were written between 10 at night and 2 in the morning. My husband says his memory of every vacation we've been on is we're going back to our hotel room or our boat cabin room at 1 in the morning, and I'm saying, this is when I'm awake, Bruce. I don't want to go to bed now. I'm awake. I'm not saying anybody has to. I'm not advocating. I'm just saying you need to find your rhythm. You need to find when is the best time for you to write. What maybe the best place. Maybe, well, you know, Melanie, when you said the ideas don't come in the office, I'm not good enough on a computer that the thing goes from my brain into my computer. Goes from my brain, handwritten on a pad of paper, and then it's typed. And I really like that a lot for a couple of reasons. If I'm writing along on the pad of paper and I hit writer's block and I can't think of what to do next, I go into my office and I type it up and now I'm rolling. If I'm typing it up and I just can't type anymore, I grab the pad of paper. What I also like about the pad of paper, though, is I'm not real creative in my office. And so I can go sit outside on the deck. I could go to a park. I could go sit by a lake. I can go sit in a Starbucks because I love the smell of Starbucks. I can go anywhere I want and write my book. In fact, I do a lot of writing in airports. There's something about I'm real creative in an airport. They come along and they say, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, your plane has been delayed for another 4 hours. And I'm like, yay. I don't say it out loud because people would kill me. But inside I'm going, oh, man, 4 hours of solid writing. No phones ringing, no email coming through. I'm going to get a lot done on this trip. So I'm not advocating you have to do this. Please don't go, oh, my Lord, I can't stay up past 10. All I'm saying is you need to find your unique, weird little quirks that help. Maybe it helps to have music playing. Maybe it helps to have sunshine coming in. Maybe you want the cat near you when you're writing. Find what works for you and what gets you going. Writing, I got to tell you, writing a book is way more than getting to know about your book. You'll find out a lot about yourself, and when you finish, you will say, I wish everybody could have had this experience. It's frustrating, it's lonely, it's aggravating, it's exhilarating, it's satisfying, it's wonderful and terrible all at the same time.
And I could remind people about there are so many different ways to organize thoughts and ideas, and you address that in the program, too, whether you're using big, what's your paper taped on the wall, using sheets and notebooks. If you're putting key ideas on index cards that you can spread all over the floor and play with them physically.
Oh, you're talking about the mind mapping, the preparing before you write it?
Well, Lord, even as you're writing it, for some people to write the stories or to write key concepts on index cards and then rearrange them on the floor.
That's right. I tape papers up and I draw with colored pencils and draw circles in that. Other people take one page of a notebook for each topic. And you're right, on some people do cards, there's all different systems. And again, you want to make it fun. I like to use colorful pens this last book about manage your time to reduce your stress, I had like one color for finding the values in your life, one color for eliminating and streamlining, one different color for boundaries. And every time I hear a story or think of an example or something, I'd add it to that in that color. And then at the end, I'd write it all out in an outline. All the purple stuff would be about boundaries, and that would go in that chapter. And I'd just jot it down, and then I'd go and type the book. But then, see, if you've spent 6 weeks throwing ideas into a mind map or an outline or on putting them in cards, then the book practically writes itself. You've got all your ideas and your examples and your graphs and your charts all together, so the book practically writes itself. It's fabulous. I really do encourage people to, because my first book took years. I'd work on and off, on and off, on and off. The second book, when I tried the system that we talk about in here, it's too complicated to go in on the radio, but when I started the system, that book took 6 months, and then my next book took 4 months. And so people are going to be able to get going. I hear you say, Deborah, that you're really eager to get going. Are you ahead of the game? Has the lessons that you got from the Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship, have you caught up, like you've done everything and you're waiting for the next lesson?
No, not quite. I was actually going to point out that another barrier comes to mind. I actually finished a dissertation, and it was 275 pages. So, and it was done between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. Kind of like what you were saying. What my problem is that I have this job that completely limits my ability to work during my optimum time.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with that either.
What to do with your job, you mean?
Yeah, because to be honest, I've gotten so serious about it that I spoke to my husband and said, you know, maybe could I, either cut back to half-time or completely quit the job because I really want to do this. And he's in support of that, but there's a health insurance problem. So I feel like that's a barrier, too, is that I can't do it full-time.
Yeah, but
you know what?
None of us can. While I'm writing these four books, I'm traveling all over the world giving talks. I make my living giving talks until I became an author. I mean, but many times I have said, oh, I wish I was a full-time writer. I wish I'm in the middle of something. I would love to just put like 3 days into this if I could only have 3 days. But one of the kids' birthday parties is this weekend, and I've got to do the PowerPoint for a presentation, an all-day presentation that I'm doing on Wednesday. And I don't know anybody, even people who stay home, they don't have – guys can do full-time sometimes. Most of the women that I know, I mean, they have to stop. They got to go to the grocery store. They got to do the laundry. They got to do cooking and that. So no matter what you do, and I really believe in this economy, this is not the time for you to drop to part-time. The reason being that if finances get tough, it will be hard to land a job because they're just not as – because so many other people are out of work also. I just feel – here's what I decided. When I decided to write my book, I didn't have much time, and I decided I was going to write it 1 hour a week. That's all I could give my book, 1 hour a week. And at the end of the year, I would have 52 hours worth of writing done. And I thought, I don't know if you can write a book in 52 hours, but I will have a lot done. I bet in 52 hours I'll have a lot done, and that's all I was going to do. So week number 1, 2, 3, 4, each week I did 1 hour. I wrote on my calendar when I was going to write, and the phone would ring off the hook, and people would be saying, I really need you. And I thought, if I was at the store, they wouldn't be able to talk to me, so I'm not going to. If I was out teaching a seminar, they wouldn't be able to get me. I finally learned as a speaker to turn my phone off. Do you know how embarrassing it is? They read this thing at the beginning. Before we introduce our speaker, everybody turn your phone off, and then a phone goes off, and it's mine. Oh, that is really embarrassing. So I finally have stopped that business, finally got in the habit of shutting off my own phone. So I did this 4 hours, 1 hour, and then at the fourth hour, something snapped inside me. I don't know what it was. And that's when I started going from 10 till midnight maybe, and then I had to get up at 6:30 to go to work. And okay, so I didn't get a lot of sleep. And then, you know, 6.5 hours wasn't that terrible. And then, you know, maybe on Friday I'd stay up till 2, and I was making more time. But I still wasn't getting them cranked out real fast. I wasn't as organized. I got this. I developed this system. I call it the talk type trim system of writing a book. I developed that after writing the first book. The first book was just so haphazard. So you know, Deborah, if you can just set the timer for 1 hour after your kids are asleep, or I don't know if you have kids, but for 1 hour a week, you'll get a lot done. If you set it for 1 hour, two nights a week, you'll get a lot done. I don't think you have to. I think that when I was in high school, they always used to say, if you want something done, give it to the busiest person. I know a lot of people who quit their jobs to write and didn't get to writing because this came up and that came up. I think stay busy, stay at your job, you're going to be busy, write for an hour, treat your son to undivided attention with him, where it's not cleaning his room, but it's going to the playground, getting some fresh air, and you'll be fine. It'll come, it'll happen. And that now I am full time as a speaker and a writer, but I was working at a counseling agency when I started. So, you know Scott Turow, who wrote Presumed Innocent, and Harrison Ford was in the movie. He wrote his book. His whole book, Presumed Innocent, he wrote the whole thing riding to work on the L. Whoops, are you there?
Yes.
Are you there? Are you gone?
Nope, we're here.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I've been having trouble with my phone today, and I thought it clicked off or something. He wrote the whole thing riding the L. In Chicago, we have a thing called an L. It's like a subway or an elevated or something. The whole thing. He wrote the whole thing riding to work and coming home. He, you know, you just write it where you can. I write mine in airports. I wrote one really good section of a chapter waiting in the dentist's office. That's what you do. I really recommend that you get a notebook and you start carrying your notebook around, and that's going to have your book in it, and that's where your outlining is going to be and your book's going to be, and you just get in the habit. I am in the habit of really appreciating precious pockets of time. And if I get an extra 5 minutes here or an extra 5 minutes there, I write. You know, I just write a little snippet, a little sentence. I go for a walk, and we have a lake near us. I go for a walk around the lake. I come home, and I can hardly wait to all these thoughts came to me, and I'm writing. I want to say a few words about self-publishing versus trade publishing. There's ups and downs to both sides, and you really do need to explore it, because sometimes somebody will tell you, well, there's a better profit in self-publishing. That's absolutely true, but there's more to the story. Am I talking too much? Do you want to cut in here
fine.
And say something?
No, you're just fine.
Okay. People will say there's more profit. That is true. If you have a $20 book and you self-published it, you can probably have it printed out for only $2, and you will make $18 on each book. If you have it through a New York trade publisher or royalty publisher, you probably will only make $10 on that book, which is not 18. It's a lot less. But that only counts for the books that went from your hands to the customer's hand. How many books are we going to sell ourselves? When my book sold 100,000 copies, I'm a professional speaker. I do sell books when I give a talk, but I only sell 100 here, maybe, you know, and I don't sell thousands. I got a check. I got a royalty check for $40,000, $39,900, I should be honest, not $40,000. That money didn't come from the profit of selling to one customer at a time. That came from royalty checks. So when you decide whether you want to self-publish or trade publish, don't base it on the fact that you make a higher profit on the book, because that's only on the books you yourself can sell, and we, most of us, are not in a position to sell thousands. We're only, you know, maybe we could sell 100 here and 100 there, but not thousands. Whereas if it's in the bookstore, lots more will be sold. Does that make sense?
Sure does. And Rita,
yeah.
We've got 5 minutes left. Time flies when you're having fun.
Okay.
So in our last 5 minutes, you do talk about that's one of the lessons in the Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship. Can you summarize or highlight that program in our last 2 minutes?
Yes. What we did was we put together the program that I always wished I had. And I had bought, like Deborah bought a program, Melanie did, I had bought a program from somebody, and it was overwhelming. It was everything at once. I couldn't do it all. I started it, and then Christmas came, and I put it away. And so I really wished I had something that was spooned out to me just a little bit at a time. So we put together the Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship, and you get something like every 2 weeks. You get and it covers five important areas of writing. The first area is doing your homework and deciding who you're writing for and why you're writing the book, because once you decide that, it will color many of the decisions you make later, like your writing will color your writing style. I knew that there were 11 books out there by psychologists for psychologists about procrastination. I didn't want to write. I had worked at a counseling agency for 18 years. I was qualified, but I didn't want to write in a psychological way. I wanted to write about it behaviorally, and I wanted it to be easy reading for a high school dropout. I didn't dumb down the book, but I would use $1 words instead of $20 words, not dumbing it down, but just as if we're talking normally. That's how I wrote the books. And if you read any of my books, you'll see that's my style. I knew who I was writing for. And so there's a lot of preparation ahead of time. Then the second part of the five lessons is what Melanie and Deborah and I were talking about, and that was the mind mapping, the preparing the taking any charts or cartoons or any or quotes and how to organize them, and just laying it out. The third section is the actual writing of the book, and we give you a little more time there. That isn't every 14 days. And each of these sections, you get an audio with me talking about what we're going to be covering and how we're going with it and what's going to happen, and covering some of it verbally. And then 14 days later, you get the first half of the lesson, and you read about stuff, and you write in your answers, and then you get the second half. And then 14 days after that, you get another audio with me on the next section. Okay, so section 3 is writing the book. Section 4 is deciding, do you want to trade publish or self-publish? And there's a lot of help in there. Do you want an agent? Do you want to get a publisher? A lot of help for getting an agent and a publisher. And then the last section is promoting it so that, you know, you could write the best book in the world, and if nobody knows about it, nobody buys it. So the last section is how to promote your book with a lot of help. I talk about getting endorsements. We even have the phone number of the Screen Actors Guild, SAG, where you can call and how to connect with the agents and managers of celebrities if that's the kind of endorsement you're looking for. And I do encourage people to look for endorsements. Deborah, I encourage you to read books that are similar to yours to get some ideas, too, and those might be the people you'll ask to endorse your book. So that's a little rundown of what you can expect. In the middle of things, there's little surprises like, oh, videos show up and audios show up and, oh, my gosh, we just sent one out. That is so cool, and it's a way to search the web to see what people are asking for. So if you can't decide between a couple of topics that you want to write, you can search the web. And, wow, if a lot of people are asking for this topic, then that's the way you might want to go. Really helpful. A lot of people know what they want their first book to be, but this is a helpful tool. The other thing is I got an email from a woman and a phone call from a man last week that has been through this program already, and they both are starting their second book. And what they did was they took all the lessons of this. As you get each lesson, I encourage people to print it out and put it in a three-ring binder. And that's what they did. And now they've pulled it out for their next book. And they just both said it's super helpful for them for their next book. So this program is something that if you invest in it now, you will use it for every book you write. It's you will use it over and over. It's hard to see now that it'll happen, but it will. So
well,
is that what you wanted, Melanie?
Well, and the thing I wanted to add too, Rita, is that you made it affordable in this economy because you pay monthly. You don't have
right.
to pay
it's monthly,
up front.
It's a little more than $1 a day. I think it's like $37 a month. And it has a beginning and an end. I'm not real positive all that. It's kind of cool. I did the writing, but a guy named Daniel Hall did the marketing part of it. He wrote up the emails and wrote up the sales stuff and that. But he also makes the computer work magically. And I called the other day, and about a month ago, and I asked him, you know what, I want to take that beginning and kick it off a little faster. I don't want them to get an introduction and then wait 2 weeks. And I said, can you move that up, please? And he said, yeah. And I found out later it took him a day and a half to do it because he had to change every one of the autoresponders. So it's helpful, yeah.
It is. And I do want to thank you, Rita, so much because our time is up. And want to let my listeners know that they can learn more about your program if they go to brainbonanza.com and click on Get Help Writing Your Book in the upper right-hand corner, and it will take them out to your Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship program. And
thank you
so much, Rita, for being here. And, Deborah, thank you for calling in and participating with us as well.
You know, can I mention I have a free tip sheet? If they want to go to my website, which is RitaEmmett.com, they can get every month a little, like, 11 ways to get rid of paper clutter and stuff like that.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm going to go do that because I don't have those.
Oh, they're fun. Our little tip sheet is fun. It's short. It's quick. It's little helpful things for clutter and procrastination.
And I will also, after our show, I could put books up with my podcast, and so I will put Rita's books there. And her name, by the way, if you want to go to Rita's site, it's RitaEmmett. Rita, thank you so much again for being with us. I hope we have an opportunity to do this again, and I want to wish you safe travels on your amazing cruise.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, Melanie. I'd love to work with you again. We have so many other things we could cover.
Thank you so much. Have a great trip.
You.
And to my listeners, thank you so much for being here. And join us next week when my guest will be Pat McHenry, and we will focus on tools for abundance. So until then, make it a great week. Take some action on something you heard, and stay safe. Good night.
Good night.
Good day.
Thank you, Melanie. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.